1-1-1. Can you hear me? Yes. So what I've done with the help of Abai, with the help of various of you, is to select some of the questions, arrange them in some sort of order, and we'll go as far as possible. I don't think we'll be able to cover all of them. And what I was thinking, some of the questions are more general, some are more specifically addressed to people. So what I propose is that I'm going to read the questions, and then give the I'm not going to answer. I'm only here to dispatch the questions, and then suggest that somebody answers, and then or immediately feel free to raise your hand and continue a discussion, present a different point of view, say whatever you want to say. The only right I reserve to myself is to stop the discussion if it is continuing too long on a single topic, or somehow try to go through the various things. There is one peculiar question which I sort of was selected, and it's addressed to all the plenary speakers, so at least the plenary speakers who are here, some are gone. You know, the real scientists, the good ones, are the ones that they all the end of the conferences, so to the where is it? Here it is. So this is a question I'll start from, but I'll just read it to give the plenary speakers sort of this half hour to think about, and we'll close by getting the answers to this question here. All right. So I'll ask the question now. So this is only to the plenary speakers. And then the last 10-15 minutes, we'll just collect 10 minutes, no more. We'll just collect the answers and get reaction to these answers. So the question is the following. So you've been a plenary speaker here, and now we are in 2017 at the Loop 17 conference, somewhere on the moon, probably, or somewhere. And you are asked to give again a plenary lecture, and you're announcing a full success of your research program, or whatever you've been working on, or whatever you think now you'll be working on in the next 10 years. So this is, please put yourself in the most optimistic possible scenario. The question is, we want to know two things. First, what are you going to announce? So what is the success of the program you're answering, if it works? Just the phrase, right? Just the abstract of your Loop 17 talk. And second, what is today your estimate of the likelihood that this is going to happen? Okay, so think about, and we'll then come back in about a half hour to this . Okay, so let me now go to the to more specific question, starting from the first one, which is very simple, and there's no name attached to it, and the question is, do we expect topology change from quantum gravity? This has not come out a lot in the discussion, but has come out some, so I will... I mean, everybody can answer, but I will begin to address this question perhaps to Daniele Oriti, who has was part of his microphone to his talk.
Thank you. achieve the ground independence, then I would really like to have at least a general framework in which topology is about to change, whether the geometric one or some other notion of topology. Then the second question, or the second answer to the same question, is whether the correct classical limit or continuum limit or the correct physics is captured by forming the subsector of the theory in which topology is actually fixed. And there are several hints from simplicial orthography, in particular dynamical formulations, that would suggest that you actually have hope to get the correct continuous description only in the section which restricts the topology. But of course it's no proof, and I would prefer to investigate the answer in a more general context.
Can I get somebody helping me with the microphone? I don't have to. Thanks.
Give you the microphone.
Bye. On this?
No.
Any comments on this? Topology change?
This is a very small comment. I mean, normally one thinks that just as in classical relativity, topology change is impossible in a canonical framework. In classical relativity, the field says topology change is impossible if you start to use it. However, it seems to me that in group quantum gravity, it is quite possible that in a canonical framework there will also be topology change. And this was following me. First of all, already the classical relativity even formulates the Hamiltonian framework in terms of the connections and the tribes. Then there are extensions of classical relativity where the tribe can become degenerate. And these extensions can facilitate topology change. There was a very nice paper by Gary Horowitz about this 20 years ago or so. In quantum theory, if in fact it is true that geometry is described by something like spin forms, or the canonical framework is described something by spin networks, then it can also be the case that there's a topology of the underlying mathematical manifold, which is just sigma cross R, but there's a topology defined by geometry. And it could happen that in the evolution, a lot of links acquire j equal to 0 and the intertwines becoming trivial. And then such state, you start with a state where j's are all not trivial, and you evolve to a state where j's are 0 in some local region. Such a state, when looked at macroscopically, would look like starting with one topology and changing and getting to another topology. So this is a possibility. The classical things are possibilities are explored much more. The quantum possibilities, of course, are not explored at all. But this is something we should keep in mind, and we should not a priori dismiss that there could be topology change in just because we're doing an Hamiltonian framework.
Comments? John Satcher?
How about from the three topologies? Because think about the Lorentz scenario. What problems? Don't you have a structural solution to the mass? I mean, generic classical problems that mass can shrink down. As long as it's non-zero, you have the Kruskal topology. When it reaches zero, suddenly it's back to the Lorentz topology. The Kruskal topology. Is it possible that quantum gravity could produce an effect like that?
The answer is yes, we've got a quantum radiation.
Okay,
then we have
what
more? Let me stay still on some very general topics like that. Then we'll go more towards specific question. There have been a series of questions all related to one another, to the large question, which is the relation between quantum gravity and quantum mechanics, in the sense of interpretation of quantum mechanics, in the sense of changing the formula of quantum mechanics, or in the sense of learning something more about quantum mechanics from quantum gravity. So let me read these questions, maybe perhaps Lucien can start, give us an answer to that, and then go ahead. So there are actually three or four. One is just, does quantum gravity offer anything to our understanding of quantum mechanics? Second, more specifically, is it right to suppose that quantum gravity be formulated within the quantum framework, or should we be looking for a deeper framework? It also says loop quantum gravity string theory formulated within the standard quantum framework. Another question from somebody else. Do you need an interpretation of quantum gravity, quantum mechanics that goes beyond what is standard measurement theory or not? And finally, is a present formulation of loop quantum gravity dependent on a given interpretation of quantum mechanics, or some insights in loop quantum gravity are based on a given specific interpretation of quantum mechanics? We have heard John Stachel this morning insisting on a point of view on that, namely on separating the two problems. On the other hand, the conference was sort of opened by Lucien with a slightly different point of view. So maybe Lucien, can you comment?
So there's several questions, four questions. So let me start with the second question, whether quantum gravity should be formulated within the standard interpretation, within the standard quantum framework. So my feeling is that although quantum theory is more difficult to interpret, it sort of poses questions for realism, so that makes us think it's somehow more mystical or magical. Actually, quantum theory and general relativity are both equally radical. They both bring equally radical new concepts to the table. And so I think we have to proceed in an even-handed manner with respect to those two theories. And particularly, general relativity is radical in places that quantum theory is not. And so consequently, it doesn't seem to me like it's plausible that we could formulate a theory of quantum gravity within the standard quantum framework. So one reason that people try to proceed within the standard quantum framework is that the mathematical technology that we have available to us, such as quantization, the economical dependence, and so on, tend to force us into thinking in terms of the standard quantum framework. So it seems to me that we need to develop new mathematical technologies that would enable us to go beyond that. And in some sense, that might best be a priority, rather than trying to force quantum gravity to work within the standard and gravitational technologies that we have already. It's a bit analogous to trying to formulate general relativity within Euclidean geometry. We needed the mathematical technology of Euclidean geometry in order to be able to do that. So I can address the other questions as well. Should I do that? Okay. So, in terms of the interpretation of quantum theory, there's different possibilities. One possibility is that having a proper understanding of the interpretation of quantum theory will be essential for formulating the theory of quantum gravity. The other possibility is that actually the correct interpretation of quantum gravity will emerge after we finish to find a theory of quantum gravity. We simply won't have an interpretation. One of the possibilities is that we need to sort of somehow match our interpretations of general relativity in quantum theory. And currently, there's a very standard interpretation of general relativity that examples are the objects of the invariant continuity models. In some sense, that just takes the framework as is. It's a bit like a Hilbert's interpretation. One can think of other pairings of interpretations. So that's the first question. So the loop quantum gravity, I don't really know how to answer that. I mean, I guess it depends on how you construct it, of course, if that's what I'm saying. And what's the one more question? Okay, that's it.
So you want to comment on that?
Two very small comments. I think if you take the process point of view, it was one intent, which I follow and Carl advocated this morning. A lot of the mysticism about quantum mechanics goes away. You don't have to talk about the state of the state, it's not so much mysticism about mechanics, it's about the process, finding about the world. Secondly, in general, the history of physics seems to be that one proceeds conservatively, modifying the theory as little as possible. And when you find that you can't, then one makes it work. If you look at special relativity, to that point, you see that Einstein himself was kind of as not revolutionary, but he's doing this, trying to modify classical physics in this way, and by the relativity principle, make it compatible with the dynamics. Could have taken that course if the concept of affine connection had been formulated first. Newton's theory could be reformulated as a theory of an affine inertial gravitation, affine connection in Newtonian space-time. I invented Newton's physics, Newton did that. And then the step from there to general relativity would have been, well, now that we know that the local space-time structure is Minkowski, how can we make that compatible with the fact that the affine connection represents inertial gravitation field? And that's what I teach the subject. Makes a transition from special to general, from Newtonian gravity theory and special relativity to general, to feel less radical in that way. Didn't have that much to start with. So I think one should explore as far as possible the possibility of making a quantum theory of gravity based on quantization of general relativity by some variable setting. If that fails, then we go on to the next. But I think we learn a lot from the attempts, because it does fail.
Comments. Comments. Thomas? Where is Thomas? Do you want to comment from about?
I think I have a conservative point of view with regard to changing the rules of quantum mechanics just to be possible with general relativity. So suppose you're doing ordinary quantum theory of some matter system in some fixed space-time, then the Hamiltonian framework is a widely used tool for doing everything that you want to compute, find a conceptual problem. You can, the difficulty with general relativity is of course that because of space-time, the model is granted as a problem of time and theory, and that's where all the trouble is in conceptual interpretation of general relativity and what that particular comes from. But I want to emphasize here this relational problem that was introduced by the Carl and further developed by Aaron, which in principle, some of these principles are conceptually, it's a nice framework to actually map general relativity to this whole very nice situation where you do have a Hamiltonian and where you do know what patient and quantities you're talking about. I'm not saying this is easy, but it's a conceptual clear framework right now. One can just proceed with the old rules of quantum mechanics and try to quantify the system.
Comment from Bianca?
Some of them are classical or quantum mechanical. And I think that many it's a very exciting text, and there are some indications of the papers so far that indicate that, for instance, we can get some kind of full body count by just starting from a relation approach.
John Donahue, is that correct?
There's some approaches to quantization that are particularly difficult to handle in general relativity. But it doesn't seem to, but there are others that are easier. For example, Tavenderman has seems reasonable in general relativity. And so if I look at the picture that we have now, I don't see a need to break down quantum mechanics. As I discussed in the paper, there is an indication within the theory itself that the general relativity must change in some way. There's something's going to happen. And so the experimental evidence, if you want, was in favor of keeping quantum mechanics and changing the general relativity.
Comments? Lucien? Sorry, this microphone, it's a kind of microphone that requires to talk directly into it.
So, this general issue of conservatism science, I think it's a good one for conservatism. Of course, it depends who's conservatism and what you're talking about. And in retrospect, some people are very conservative. And that was the very conservative path to follow, but there can be many such things. And what even want to do isn't necessarily a non-conservative thing to do. But somebody would expect me to modify general activity, so we know at least we have to be that non-conservative. So I don't think... I don't think conservatism itself is a good enough reason not to think about modifying quantum theory. In fact, I think the reason people don't do it is more a matter of inertia than a conservatism.
I think this is a subject in which, I mean, it's obviously a key subject, but on which we could go on forever. So let me stop this here and go to the next one. Otherwise, we spend 1 hour about that. This was a pretty interesting breakthrough of points of view on this question. So let me change subject. There's one question. Which I found quite interesting is the following. Quantized gravity should feature a fluctuating causal structure. Right? Question mark. Right? Presumably, fluctuating light cones. What should be some experimental signatures of such fluctuations? Are these effects predictable or computable from current proposals? Even very small. Addressing this question to two persons. First to Sabine Rosenfelder, who has talked in general about phenomenology, and then in particular to Inaki Garay, one of the speakers in the afternoon, who has addressed this issue. So I would say Sabine first. Where is she? Can see her? Okay.
Yes, and this is a very interesting question. I think I briefly mentioned that on the slide earlier that I have been defined by. So if one has a model with a stochastic reflection to recognize the potential visualization and the light cone, and this would, for example, affect the theoretical prediction of photons. So one of the steps from the stochastic deepening of photons that arrive. So, one can do that within that certain model and have my predictions from it. And I somehow have a preference in my mind and how to actually do it. The question in this approach, as in many other approaches, is of course
How does it really relate to underlying theories or results? Successfully fluctuated backgrounds are also in the sense kind of dialogue, and in my sense, do not really very strictly relate to underlying theories.
Thank you. Inaki, where is? Okay. Speak right into the microphone.
Yeah, hold the microphone close to your mouth.
Okay, so
I'm like Mike Jagger.
General increasing of the water gravity expected as something. This is merely the red bones because of the spectrum of the objects measured by the metric. So, and it's possible that the computer is more like instruments, but the computer the micro-study of the system. So, yeah, of the evolution and of the fields, and we can compute the communication relations between the fields and points in the space that is in micro-processed of the system. The thing is that we are dealing with an interacting theory. So, we have to take into account that now the competitor is not going to be a similar. Computes on matrix 7, and we have been able to compute the vacuum map of matrix 7, and we have some nice models where the light bombs are smearing. Yeah, so it's, I think that is a prediction for the sign intuition, and it looks like to be intuition, and this effect will improve the area.
That's it. Thanks. Lucien.
So, I know this question under the fluctuation suggests that we have sort of a classical oscillation between the two. So, the visual we have is that we have this classical, so it seems that some kind of quantum deadlifts, like quantum type of superposition between the two different structures. It's also quite important to see the proper experimental signature of that, so there's some kind of interference effect. So you actually see coherence between these two different structures, and so on, and the interference effect. I think it'd be difficult to do that because it's difficult to get control of the gravitation between the same way that you can say control the photons as it passes through a magnetic interferometer. But that, the sort of signature that you would really like to see.
Just to amplify on what Inyaki said, there are two issues. One is experimenting, but I guess as the question said, it's probably tiny and you won't be able to observe it. And the other is what is true in principle. And in fact, these models that the Madrid group has looked at in detail, exactly the thing that that Lucien was saying is observed. Exactly the interference between the causal structures, between fluctuating causal structures, exactly as that's Lucien would like to see.
Mike?
Thank you. Two very simple questions. Points. First of all, if you don't have a fluctuating causal structure, then you have only one scalar degree of freedom in the metric. So perhaps somebody, I think I've seen that someone is worried about quantization of only this degree of freedom with the rest fixed. I don't know if someone knows literature better can say something about what those theories are like. And the other thing, there is an idea, which I think is never really stated seriously in the papers, but somehow is present in discussions that in quantum gravity, the light cone is somehow unsmeared or fuzzy or something like that. But of course, the fact that the light cone
is, or the causal structure is dynamical, by no means means that the matter sees some somehow indefinite causal structure. It just means that the matter participates in the same fluctuations, and so it could be that the matter always propagates on that, or sees a definite causal structure, but the whole matter and the gravity field fluctuate together. So,
Virginia?
Yes, I always want to comment. I mean, I would expect, for instance, in a, if one tries to compute scattering amplitudes for a process in the low energy regime, one tries to look exactly at this, if there's a mean to have a structure or a fluctuation of like constant. I would expect that in this case, if the energies are high enough, this could be described by a graviton exchange. You would not see the difference between, I mean, graviton exchange would describe exactly this. So the question is,
is there a change on
this, and one can show this
could
be a description or not?
I'm sorry, I'm supposed to be talking about the field group work, I didn't have people here. So this is a specific model, it is symmetric reduction of Einstein's theory, but it is exactly soluble, where there are these fluctuations, and they are very nice work because I can compare the non-perturbative effects with the perturbative effects in the vibration, and one finds that the non-perturbative effect is not captured by a simple graviton exchange. It is something deeper and is something along the lines of what Lucien was saying.
Martin. I knew that out of the 40 questions wouldn't go very far.
In the framework of the gravitational average action, there is a natural possibility that light, for example, is fluctuating, but they are actually scale dependent. At each length scale, we have a separate metric and therefore a separate light cone structure. And so the logical possibility is that the question about the space time point A causally can or cannot influence space-time point B. It depends actually on what is your apparatus to transmit that signal, a large one or a small one. I might provide different answer to the question how B can be influenced by A. And I think this is an effect which is potentially on top of all this kind of fluctuating like discussion. So,
Let me move to, we're almost at the end of the time. I mean, we don't have much time. Let me move to some of the specific questions. Is Fotini here? Oh, she did. Oh, okay. So that drops. Is Alejandro Perez here? Yes, it's here. So the question to, actually there are two questions to Alejandro. One is number three. A specific question. What is finite in spin form models?
Okay, so this is a technical question, so we understand very, very clearly the relationship between spin form models in dynamics and in some examples. For instance, in the Fanger, there we can call the spin form models in the spin form representation of what is going to occur. And so typically, spin forms, there are divergences, some divergences, potential divergences. When we design our representation for the model or for the pieces in the world, those models of supersangularity in this informal representation were known since long time ago, it was a regression model that diverged chance of schemes not converge, which are typically related to in the analogy of spiral diagrams, we include loop diagrams. One has kinks which are not restricted by boundary conditions to be bounded in one's infinite sense, which diverges. But when we understood the precipitation between these spin-form conditions and the canonical frame, we also understood the origin of divergences. And in fact, what it asks is probably these divergences are not there. These divergences were there because when we, so to say, calculating unifying delta functions at the same points, so to say, imposing constraints randomly. So in these cases were related between the canonical decision and the coherent decision's precise, exactly understood. There are no differences, everything is absolutely clear. Now, in four dimensions, the situation is more difficult because we still have to call these things models because we don't have the establishing of this precise relationship between the two organization perspectives. But of course, in some dimensions, these models, there are differences which are of the same nature of the ones we have in the one graph. Many of the models we use in four-dimensional reality are based on the generalization of the plasma gravity, which is the estimate, which is the topological theory, in which you impose constraints that make these models models of quantum gravity. So this makes the question more difficult there because we impose these constraints, we use some symmetries that we were associated to these divergences in the topological case. There are some models that when you do this in a sort of natural fashion, you impose this simplicity constraints in a certain way. Imposing constraints affect the amplitudes in a way that this sum of spins becomes finite. And when we discover these models, we were saying it happened because finite seem to come very naturally from these models. But of course, there are many other models which so the question of finiteness remains related to the question of whether these models are the ones that really correspond to the finitization. And then the GST kind of framework, which was really the framework in which this finiteness was. These divergences are like finite diagrams divergences. So in the GST table, the statement is that the finite amplitudes are, so order by order, these GFTs are finite. And they are more than divergences. So sorry, it's not very really good, but I'm not very clear. Maybe,
comments? In fact, since you have the microphone, there's another question to you. At the end of Peretz's talk, the discussion on the ambiguities of the theory versus different theories came out. Can we restart it? Well, instead of restarting, can you comment about it? Yes, the difference between ambiguities in a theory or choice between different theories.
Yes. So I think, of course, we need to understand these things more precisely. Let's try to emphasize this is a very important problem in our field. So what we need to understand is, I think there are two kinds of ambiguities. One is the one we always have, which is the choice of our theory. What action we treat it for many fields to begin with, and so on. But these are not the ambiguities that are important. The ambiguities of ordinary are those which seem to be related to our choice of regularization. So, in the regularization process, we need to give meaning to some things that are true to all regulators. That in field theory are Norwegian, so if we are given a positive distribution, or already by distribution of the same coordinates, like one is the visualization. There seems to be, there are, in the interaction of these predictors, we seem to be creating infinitely many choices. I want to emphasize the words we see, because there are examples in which this happens in interdimensional gravity, but these are absolutely no effects in this configuration. Now, so the distinction is this, and it's maybe something that's wrong with the kind of discussion. There are ambiguities related to the choice of the ambiguities related to the process of linearization. Those are the dangerous ones. For example, if we consider, I think that if we consider the simplicial quantum gravity, we start a certain quantity by looking at the unit element of space time that we associate with four simplex. But this four simplex, mind you, is not a real entity, it's an element of our regular realization. And we could equally well look at the same question in terms of the hierarchy instead of the four simplex. Now, if answers to our physical question depend on choices of this kind, then the words that we have used to the same time, not immediately to the choice of the field.
We're pretty short of time. I suggest one last argument. I mean, there are many here. So I'll just choose one last, and then, because it's already 12:20. There's a question, I'll read the question and then I'll comment. The question is the following. Assume there's a fundamental theory of nature containing or being quantum gravity which employing graphs or spin forms. What do we hope it to be? One, rather a combinatorial theory where space or space-time emerges as some kind of semi-classical limit of graphs or spin forms, or two, some theory where these structures are defined as embedded in a three or four-dimensional manifold that has to be fixed in the beginning. In short, will the space-time manifold be an input or an outcome of the theory? Do we want to quantize? Stop here. And the reason I thought this is an interesting question is because there are somehow two very interesting point of view developing that seemed incompatible with one another. On the one hand, the abstract graph, the algebraic formulation that Christine and Thomas have been talking about for loop quantum gravity. On the other hand, all the work that Sundance, Pilson, Thompson, and Lee and others have been mentioning that on the possible emergence of particles where you actually need the manifold to braid things, otherwise it doesn't mean anything. So I wanted to maybe get an answer for the, are these things, this point of view, contradictory or not, or which one, Thomas or Christine, I don't know.
As far as this algebraic formulation is concerned, as I was emphasizing, you start with classically always with a fixed coordinate, realignment of some fixed three-dimensional manifold with some dimension destruction in it. You need this all of this in order to develop the dimension geometry and so on and so forth. But then the problem theory is always that we have in the first place, and you have a void in the group, for example, that goes more edge of the graph is excited, then you can have a hole. These holes have seem to appear or disappear into quantum dynamics. So we do have, I would say that in Microsoft, in the new quantum gravity, we do have to change all over the place, and it's almost no question about it. And that was actually one of the motivations to go one step further and formulate this on graphs which are not embedded. So I think it's an interesting possibility to have topology and the structure as merged concepts, but I'm not religious for it. And I think we should push both the embedded and non-embedded combination. I think both is possible. As far as comparison with Lee and Paul are doing, I think there's no direct comparison because we put the particles and so on and so forth, we put them into the Hamiltonian or the Hamiltonian constraint. Well, they are very good, and I don't see this. I mean, they really need the embedded case for us to talk about the gradient and so on and so forth. So I don't see really the measure.
So the hope is to get rid, in some sense, of the manifold itself.
Like I said, it's a hope.
Hope.
You know, you could all through religious thing. I mean, if you just pursue those approaches and see what works, then ultimately, maybe in 2017 or...
Jose Antonio, you're the... Jose. Okay, I'm sorry to cut this, but we're right to the end. So let me get back to the original question of the 2017 there's a remarkable coherence in the way quantum gravity is approached by various. On the other hand, of course, there are all various directions, more or less overlapping. And so, on the one hand, there is the, as John Stachel has reminded us, that 100 flowers blossom, that 100 school of thought compete. So here is the 100 school of thought. Mao Zedong, yeah. On the other hand, the current party line in China about Mao Zedong, as you know, is that he was 70% right, 30% wrong. So I suppose that many, the hope of many of the...
25 schools
could get. Yes. No, in fact, that's not. There's another possibility that each one of the speakers is 70% right and 30% wrong, which I think is the most interesting perspective. So suppose you're one of the speakers, you're actually 100% right, and... So, the question again, we're in 2017 at the LEAP 17 conference, 10 years in the future, you give a plenary lecture announcing full success. So take the most optimistic possible view, otherwise we wouldn't do physics, right, if we thought there weren't a chance to be right. So suppose you're right, and what exactly you would be announcing? So what is the sign of success? I mean, what are you trying to do in a sense? So what would be the sort of the abstract of the talk announcing full success of the program? And second, what would be the what do you think today is the likelihood that this will happen 10 years in the future or earlier? So which way should we go? Let's go in chronological order. The people, Lucy, you're the first of the speaker, I think. And Rafael's not here, so next one is John. So listen.
Thanks. So you said we should be as optimistic as possible.
Yes.
So at the Causal LEAP 17 conference, I'm going to present a paper called On the Foundations of Quantum Gravity. That's basically following up from Einstein's title on the foundations of general relativity. So the abstract is by taking, in an even-handed manner, fundamental insights from quantum theory and general relativity. We propose principles from which theory of quantum gravity can be constructed. We are able to account quantitatively for data collected in recent measurements of interference experiments, and make new predictions for experiments which are just about feasible with current technology. Okay, so the first part, the theoretical part, I have a higher percentage chance of getting right than the second part, but I have no idea what that percentage is. So. In having complete ignorance, say 50%, and then the chance of getting the second part right is 10%. That's 5%.
Okay, John.
I have a background in deep end inversion theory of extended model of gravity. Background dependent was put in there just to make a really talk. And so I'll describe a set of models in which asymmetry and general covariance are not present in the original theory, but are emerge in the long range theory. These are consistent with the finite or defining degrees of freedom, which have been made in freedom theory to describe the general model of relativity. There's an initial non-invariant background claim that corresponds to the freedom water cosmology, and I can discuss new experimental evidence that shows a parametrically small violation of general covariance. Probability of such a theory existing, I put it 60%, though not likely by me. And on the experiment, I put a 0.5% view. It's not a 0.5% I'm looking for.
Okay, 0.5%. Huh. Thomas is next, I think. 0.5%.
Okay, my answer would be. We have finally come up with a systematic calculation for reading the quantum gravity corrections to the electron fine structure. The results in agreement with the experiments recently very well reported. Percentages
bye.
So, a relation between loop quantum gravity, spin force, and group field theory is spelled out in detail. Quantization ambiguities are well understood and captured in a finite number of parameters. Relation between full loop quantum gravity and symmetry reduced models is well understood. Using reductions that are well suited to the space missions which are planned for the next 5 years, effect of quantization ambiguities on the planned observations are worked out. Since predictions are sensitive to the parameters describing the quantization ambiguities, these observations should resolve all these ambiguities. I think this is the most optimistic thing.
Yes.
So the chance that I will give for this to actually happen is 0%. The chance that there actually would be understanding of the relationship between the two theories and capturing the ambiguity in a finite number of parameters out here about 70%. The relation between full theory and symmetry reduced models around Europe, again about 70%. And actually working out some experimental predictions which can distinguish between quantization ambiguities out here about 50%.
Jan is not here. Moshe Razali is here. I haven't seen him. Nope. Klaus is not here. Alejandro.
My answer would be, we showed in our recent paper, we showed the calculations that are not by Kiva. Once again, it's hard for me to think about 10 years ahead because, but I'd like to say that, I mean, this phrase, stage point, comes to my mind. Just coming up in one camino, just a camino, and I choose something that, sorry for translation, because what is the role? What makes the role by logic? So, this is the way I think of the future.
I see. Martin? Martin?
The title of this, and not in the abstract, we're going to cosmology, we're going to apply these observations of the cosmogonization of the wave background. And I came up with this in 1%, but only because these guys can understand it.
The other Martin Oida here. Here.
The title of the talk would be on loop quantum gravity, asymptotic safety, and Lorentzian loop translations. And the abstract would be we show that the above mentioned approaches to quantum gravity are equivalent. In particular, we establish that the Hamiltonian approach, the discrete Lorentzian dynamic triangulation approach and the continuum approach using the other projection are different manifestations of the same underlying theory. In particular, we established that the discretization amplitude of the quantization amplitudes are equal to the dimensionality of the ultraviolet the manifold of the non-Gaussian fixed point, and that this number is a finite small number below 10. The probability for this to happen, I would say something like 20% for the first part of the statement and something like 0.1% for the assessment of the dimensionality.
Great, thanks. Daniele?
Okay, sorry, I don't have an abstract, so it's usually submitted later. But I know what we're going to talk about. So, 100% model-dependent predictions are especially difficult about the future. So, so 100% sure that if I'm still working on Good for Tears, I'll be reporting on the following. So, on the fact that there is a general format and a scheme, very detailed, on how to formulate statistical Good for Tears, and how to check for equilibrium, for an equilibrium phase at low temperature, and derive the hydrodynamic approximation for that, for any specific model that you can try to test. That is kind of sure. Almost sure, meaning like, I don't know, 70% or 80%, is that for the same models, for several models, or for some slightly simplified versions of the same, I can derive an effective dynamics, or at least I can execute the effective dynamics in the other dynamic fields. This is less sure because we know from the next method that effective field deriving or proposing or writing up effective dynamics or models is very much more hard. So it depends on several guesses, it depends on approximation, and it depends usually very much on the experiments. So that depends very much on how many experimental signatures of quantum gravity we will have, or at least how much we will have tested some phenomenological models of quantum gravity. The part that I'm less sure about, but being optimistic, I would say 50 or 60%, is that I can exhibit in the same talk at least one correct class of models whose aerodynamic approximation fits with the generativity. And the reason why I'm not sure is that I find it very hard to extrapolate 16 orders of magnitude. But the reason why I'm optimistic is, first of all, that we know already well from decades of the research about what the correct theory may be, and the models that have been proposed recently come out of all this 70, 60, whatever, decades of years of work. And then because both I'm optimistic also because we have hints, insights and results from many different approaches. And I'm sure that we will be able to capitalize on all these results and insights.
Great, thanks. Jorge Pulling is not here, right? Baylock is not here either, otherwise we would have heard him, a lot of comments. Fotini is not here, Lee is not here, Sabine. Davanti.
Hopefully in that 10 years it's been possible to derive some technological models directly in a top-down approach from various theories that have been proposed. It's been possible to make some measurements that strongly indicate which of the promising candidate theories is the right one, and those specific parameters as and what I want to talk about is some new piece of data, say, you know, gravitational background and how it fits into the analysis. And well, hopefully, in this data, there's also something that we cannot explain within any of these approaches, that these are somewhere different. Maybe there's a peak and some spectrum that no one anticipated, or maybe we found some very clear kind of meta that gravitational. Yeah. Is like something that totally doesn't fit in general relativity whatsoever. Probability for this to happen within 10 years, 50%. Within 20 years, I would give it 80%. And well, of course, 10 years from now, I'm 100% permanent position.
Okay, yes. John.
The title of my paper would be quantized conformal projective structures in general relativity. The result would be that the quantization of conformal projective structures has been successfully carried out. The quantized compatibility conditions have led to the result that proper time and proper volume are quantized, and that results on area volume quantization, two areas, if you write quantization, are frame-dependent perspectival effects on this quantized core volume. Chance of success with the program, 20%. But now, I once spoke to Ashok Petru, who was slightly younger than I am now, and asked him a question, and he said, well, in 10 years, another answer. He said, for me, 10 years is like infinity. So in my case, I'll be a little more optimistic and say, the chance I'll be around in 10 years is 10%.
Of course you will.
The chance that I'll still be sound enough in body and mind to give a talk is about 1%.
Michael.
Sea of Tranquility, 2017, called for the same reasons as the Texas Symposium, it's called Loops 17. Okay, a consistent quantization of general relativity, abstract. A non-canonical formalism provides a consistent quantization of general relativity in which the gravitational field is represented by consistent states in a network of finite dimensional Hilbert spaces. Using calculations of dispersion relations for protons coupled to gravity by the Roman group of Ulrike et al., the result of close agreements with the experimental results of Tiemann et al. The fact that the theory will be consistently quantized with many different matter models indicates independently of whether it is physically correct, that physics remains an experimental exploration.
Nice. So my answer is the following. I was circulating a notebook around, and please bring back to me at the end of the conference, and we'll discuss it. This will be mine. I'm sorry? Sorry, you're right. I was following the... you're right. Yes. Thanks.
The quantum dynamics of the process in the abstract represented quantum measure in the space of puzzle set histories, which along with the interpretive scheme or isomorphism and the work in Russian, deals with the complete theory of quantum gravity, which includes not only the dynamics of the gravitational field, but also the fundamental interaction of the quantum. I'll give it probably that song.
Okay, just a comment. I think that, how can I put it, 100 flowers are blossoming, 100 school of thoughts are competing. But on the other hand, also from this final comment, I do see this remarkable convergence, the desire of convergence and exchange of... what I want to say is this... Alejandro Corici, Robert Ego, Jose Antonio Zapata, Daniele Colosi. For me, this has been a wonderful conference. I've learned like rarely at a conference. So thank you very much for bringing all us together and for this fantastic meeting. And see you all in 2017 or earlier.
I think not at all.